Welcome to the commemorative 9/11 podcast of the Victory Girls blog. I am Deanna Fisher, and today here with me is Cassie Fiano, one of our co-founders, and Catherine Wilkinson, who's one of our editors and writers. Say hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hey, hi.
Hi,
everybody.
So the reason that we three are here for this particular podcast is because we're talking about 9/11, but specifically for the three of us, 9/11 impacted our family lives. And for each of us, we had a close family member serving in one of the armed forces. So I'm going to let each person introduce themselves and who that person in their life was. And we'll do a little bit of talking about our experiences sending them or watching them go. We should clarify that we are not specifically speaking for them. So this is our big disclaimer that all of the experiences that we talk about are things that we personally experienced and not things that our loved ones experienced while serving, since we are not authorized to talk for them since some of them are still on active duty. Cassie, why don't you start off?
Well, for us, we were in high school when 9/11 happened. So Matt wasn't in the Marine Corps at the time. We were both seniors. And it was one of those things, there was no way that I ever could have predicted what kind of effect it would have, on my life. Because, I mean, there's no way that you can know that you're going to marry someone that joins the Marine Corps. And, because of this horrible thing that happened, even if he had joined the Marine Corps, if 9/11 had never happened, it would have been during peacetime. And it would have been so different. And that's what I get told, or I was told, by a lot of the older, military wives. They had been able to be married to a service member, when we weren't at war. So I can't even imagine what that's like. I can't even picture it.
Did you and Matt go to high school together?
No, we knew each other since middle school, but we didn't go to the same schools. We met through mutual friends, and we weren't even dating. We were good friends, but we didn't date in high school. So I literally had no idea the effect that 9/11 would have on my life. But because of that, he's been on four deployments, twice to Iraq, twice to Afghanistan. One of those deployments, he was in an IED blast, and he got a grade 2 concussion, traumatic brain injury, and so he still has problems with that. He gets ringing in his ears from that. He gets headaches and anxiety attacks and things that he never had had problems with before. He missed the birth of one of our children, because he was in Afghanistan. We spent most of our marriage so far apart, more of it apart than we have together. And that's only because of 9/11. If 9/11 had never happened, I don't even know what military service would be like, because I have nothing to compare it to. I don't know what peacetime would even be like. I have no idea.
Okay. Catherine, tell us about your son.
Our son, Mac, was also in high school, but he had been determined to become a Marine since he was in kindergarten. This is all he talked about. So it was no big surprise once 9/11 happened and the impact on the nation as a whole, and especially on young men that are thinking of a military career, that really kind of sped up his idea. So he enlisted in June of 2002 and went into combat training September 11th, 2002, which is kind of ironic on the year anniversary. He deployed 3 times. I'm not allowed to speak of any of them. The last time he was assisting with the transition team, training the Iraqi army, and that was pretty interesting letters from Iraq, I'll say. But again, I'm not really able to speak about them, mainly because he's asked us not to speak of those experiences. But for our family to see a young man, well, he's always the little boy, to see him change so visibly through boot and then continue on and go to his first deployment was, I don't think, a hard thing for our family to go through. It was both of my husband and I's family are military families, so we were a little bit familiar, but like Cassie said, everything's been so peaceful up until 9/11. And this was the first time the idea of World War II and big events like that hit the psyche of the American people. Like, we're in big trouble here, and it affected how young men going into the service, I think, approach the situation. So yes, 9/11 definitely changed the routine and feelings of our family and continues. I mean, nothing really has changed. He's not deployed right now. You know how that goes. So
is he still on active duty, Catherine?
Yes, he is. He is stationed at Camp Pendleton now.
Okay. And for me, it's slightly different because this was my family member was my younger brother, but he entered the Army before 9/11. He graduated from high school in 99, and he was already commissioned as a second lieutenant when 9/11 occurred. And he, at that point, was in the Alabama National Guard. He was going to school in Alabama at the time, and we are not from Alabama. This was kind of convoluted, but that's where he was, and that's where his girlfriend was. But he ended up graduating and getting married. And after he and his wife got married, he was scheduled for Officer's Basic course, which he completed. And then he was sent to Germany, which is where his first duty station was. And from Germany, he was deployed to Iraq. And then they were planning on, after that deployment, they were planning on relocating to Italy, and where his oldest was going to be born, because my sister-in-law was expecting, when he got a phone call saying, congratulations, you've been assigned to a special training team, and you're going to be what we eventually knew to be the first part of the surge in Iraq. Mm. So he was in Iraq again. He missed the birth of his oldest daughter because of that. He was able to take an R&R 2 months after she was born and see her, but then he did not see her again until she was almost a year old at that point. So it definitely took a toll on his family life. It took a toll on us in a different way because he is my younger brother, and he had already kind of left. I remember when 9/11 happened, I had so many of my friends calling me saying, what is your brother going to be doing? And I said, college, because at that moment he wasn't deployable. That could have changed if his guard unit had gotten called up, but he actually joined a peacetime army. He did not anticipate this occurring. You know, this was, and joining the army was something that really occurred to him in his senior year of high school when his dreams of playing professional baseball weren't going to come to fruition. And he realized that he had a real gift for this. So right now he is actually stationed in Hawaii, and his wife and daughters are there right now, but he's actually on a training exercise at the moment in Malaysia. So, but for us, it was a different experience because we were watching these things happen, but knowing that he was going to be involved in them. So when 9/11 occurred, he just had this feeling of that he's already in. There wasn't an option where he could say, okay, this isn't what I signed up for. Let's call it quits. He was already in. He'd already made a commitment. He was already an officer. It was a go. And so as things developed and we began to watch the ramp up for Afghanistan and Iraq, we knew as a family, it was just a matter of time. Where was he going to end up? And so that was our experience, just kind of watching how things were going to go. So I think we should also talk about how their deployments affected those of us here. So Cassie, maybe you want to speak to how that happened, especially concerning being alone for childbirth.
Well, I always thought I handled it pretty well. You know,
we are sure you did
myself, you know, but I mean, of course it's hard, but the hardest part is the first day, the day that they leave. You know, it's incredibly hard to watch them walk away, you know, because you have to let them go. So to be able to kiss your husband goodbye, and you know that this could be the last time I ever see them, this could be the last time I kiss my husband, it's very difficult. And to watch them walk away, I mean, they walk away from you, and it's like everything in you just want to, you want to call out to them, or, you know, grab them or say something or try to kiss them one more time, but you can't do that. that's the hardest part. And then that those first like 24 hours for me, that was always the most difficult. But after that, you know, I would just kind of tell myself, it's started, he's gone now. There's no point in being upset about it all the time. Just, you have to move on and get on with your life. And, I guess I shouldn't say it like that, but I mean, you can't sit around crying about it every day because that just makes for a very long deployment. He's gone no matter what you do. So the childbirth was, I was lucky that, you know, our hospital was pretty accommodating, and that's probably because they are, you know, they're in a military town.
Right.
It was surely not the first time they've had this situation come up. You know, he was able to Skype into the operating room, so he was able to see everything, and he was able to, you know, in a sense, go with him to the nursery, go with Wyatt, because I had a friend that was with me, and so she took the phone, like, with her into the nursery so that he could see him, and, you know, he was, I mean, the whole morning, my surgery kept getting pushed back, so the whole morning, really, I was able to talk to him. We were also lucky that deployment that he was, like, a FOBIT, which is the people that stay on the FOBs the whole time. You know, the previous deployments, that hadn't been the case. It was the one before that that he'd been the IED blast. He was working as a minesweeper, so it was a very high-risk job. This time, it was like the exact opposite, and he stayed on the FOB pretty much the whole time. So we were very lucky. We were able to stay on the phone like for hours that morning, pretty much just waiting, like, okay, when are we going to get this done? And then it really wasn't a problem having him be able to be, you know, there, so to speak. I remember the biggest thing I was stressing about wasn't even so much childbirth, but it was like, I'm going to have a 2-year-old and a newborn by myself. What am I going to do? But it was just, again, one of those things where, I mean, it doesn't matter what circumstances you're in. Those are the circumstances you're in. So, I mean, there's really no point complaining or whining. You just have to get it done. And so I got it done.
You didn't have much choice. I think it was probably a baby's going to come out. You have to deal with that.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, that things are what they are. And, you know, I certainly never was upset about my husband being in the military. There were wives that did feel that way. You know, I knew the other Marine wives that hated the military, that hated the Marine Corps. But because of 9/11, you know, I always felt, you know, that we were doing this for a purpose. And, you know, there would be times that he would call me from Afghanistan and, you know, demoralized or upset, you know, someone he knew had been injured or had died, or maybe it was just that he missed me and the kids, whatever the case was, you know, he would call me every now and then and just be, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. And I was like, that would be the reminder. This is why you're doing this. You know, it's not something pleasant to think about, but we have to remember that there is a purpose to why we're doing this, to why we're sacrificing. I mean, even though it was hard, I mean, we knew it was worthwhile. So that never made it unbearable,
right?
If that makes sense.
And one of the nice things that's occurred during these deployments is the jump in technology has just been phenomenal. I remember initially when my brother went through his first deployment, we were trying to use webcams via Yahoo. Skype hadn't even been invented, released, whatever yet. And so we were on a massive delay with no sound. Everything was done through Yahoo Messenger. And I was trying to show him his niece, who my daughter, and he was just thrilled with the fact he could actually see her, but there was no sound. It was just such an eerie thing. And anytime he'd make a phone call, there was just such a delay in it. And you couldn't hear yourself, but there was about a 4-second delay between back and forth. So you couldn't have a good conversation with a back and a forth because there was such a phone delay. And now it's here we are having this conversation with video and realistic time. And it was just amazing to me also that he could do, we were doing emails or we could do a messenger chat at the time. And that wasn't something that existed way back when. My mother has talked about her parents. My grandfather served in the Navy and had submarine duty. And so that was almost, you went completely incommunicado and this was in the 50s. And so you went completely dark. Your loved ones didn't hear from you because you weren't surfacing. And that was just how it was. And so we are fortunate in the sense that even though they are in harm's way, they can at least still reach out to us. And Catherine, I think you probably had some of that as well, where at least you were getting phone calls and...
Not too many. Let's see. It was mainly, he's not a big communicator anyway. So it wasn't, did call, it was never long enough. And I was just trying to eke out anything else. But of course, the connection was really horrible back then in Iraq. And speaking to what Cassie said, one thing, growing up in the Vietnam years, as I did as a young girl, I remember the stigma that was placed on men deployed to Vietnam as opposed to the men going to Iraq and Afghanistan. There was a way, way, way more of a national pride in the men that went. So it seemed like whenever we went to meet him coming home or see him offer a deployment, there was always, and I'm sure Cassie saw this, huge crowd cheering people. It was a positive experience. It wasn't cloaked in this anti-war rhetoric that was so prevalent in the 60s and 70s, which was great for me to see. Yeah, communication, those letters, I think I they're worn out because I have them in a shoebox. There's not a ton of them because he's never been a communicative guy. But we managed to get a few letters from him. And very often he really couldn't say too much, and they were short calls, and I was left wanting more. But it's all good. You just kind of, man up, like Cassie says. There was no point in crying too long or whining or complaining. It was just accepting it for what it was. You had to do what you had to do. If they could do it, we could do it. So.
I think that was probably
the other thing that I tried to remember too, was that when people would complain, and I understand, dates that they would come back would get changed or pushed back, or, you wouldn't hear from them for months on end. And that's difficult, of course. But at the same time, it was like what you said during, the 50s with the submarine service. We're so lucky now, with how much we have. I would just sit there and think, even 20 years ago or 30 years ago, or I always think of the 90s as being like 10 years ago, even though it was
we're getting old.
But, like even during the first Gulf War, it was so much harder on families then, so it was kind of like, how can I even complain? I'm able to, I can do a Skype call and see his face, even if it's only, once every month or two. People never could do that before.
Yeah, I was, when we took our family visit to Washington, D.C. this last April, we had our oldest with us at Arlington and at the Tomb of the Unknowns. And trying to explain to somebody who has grown up in an era of science and DNA that these are unknown people and that they could not identify them, and so they chose one representative body to be buried here in memory of the unknowns. She kind of looks at me and goes, well, didn't their families want to know? And like, yes, their families would have wanted to know, but but for a kid who is told that, well, DNA is your fingerprint in a sense, well, the idea that you couldn't identify a body is just foreign to her. And after all that we went through with the jumps in forensics, even post 9/11, where they were identifying the smallest pieces that they could find and just trying to extract DNA so families would have something, anything, the idea that an entire person would be buried without a name was foreign to her. And she's only 10 and a half. And of course, DNA works. And why wouldn't you do that? And then, of course, I had to add in, well, they did discover who the Vietnam unknown was, and then his family claimed his body. And so that's an empty spot in the vault. But that idea that science and technology have come so far forward that those kind of things simply don't happen anymore. And, reading through old books where